Blog Talk Radio.
From the Blog Talk Radio studios in Union City, New Jersey, this is Talk on the Hudson, and I am Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all this, the 22nd of March, the year 2017. I want to thank you for listening from wherever you are here in the good old U.S. of A. Now, I want to hear from you, ladies and gentlemen, so don't be shy and call me toll-free tonight, 657-383-0296. Once again, toll-free tonight, 657-383-0296. You can always write to the inbox here on Talk of the Hudson by writing to talkofthehudson@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow me on Instagram, ladies and gentlemen, @your_favorite_Fernando. And also follow me on Twitter @theglorious_FUJ. And lastly, for all of you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Talk of the Hudson and like it, of course. And I ask you to tell your friends too. Now, folks, Talk of the Hudson is brought to you by Olivella Restaurant. Now, for those of you that are not aware, it's a brand new gem in Hudson County, and it's the best Italian food you'll taste anywhere. Now, Olivella Restaurant is located at 7709 Bergen Line Avenue in North Bergen, New Jersey. They're open for dinner 7 days a week. Call them and make a reservation at 201-662-6110. Once again, Olivella Restaurant, you can reach them at 201-662-6110. Check out their website, which is www.olivellanj.com. Don't forget to like Olivella Restaurant on Facebook, follow them on Instagram, and also on Twitter. Ladies and gentlemen, I'm glad to have you join me tonight on Blog Talk Radio. Even though it's the first week of spring, hopefully warmer days are ahead for all of us. And now we start with the real truth. Now, I'm a homeowner and taxpayer like many of you listening tonight. But something I hear all the time is, where's my money going? Now, for those of you that are not aware, 2017 is indeed a big year here in the Garden State. We have a gubernatorial election this November, and every legislative seat is up for grabs. But here in Hudson, it bleeds solid blue, and it has for over a generation. Now, many residents approach me weekly on the street and ask me all the time, Fernando, what do our tax dollars go to? I usually say, well, infrastructure, our school system, resources for seniors, after-school programs for children, funding our local police, fire, and emergency responders are some of the things I can sort of name. And despite this, people are moving out of New Jersey in droves. Now, it's become outrageously expensive to live here, whether it's overdevelopment everywhere or residents just continue to ask me, Fernando, where does it end? And you know what? Unfortunately, I don't really even know how to answer that question sometimes, and I don't even know if I ever will. And that's one of the most challenging things about living in New Jersey, whether it's the cost of living, whether it's, again, the most densely populated state in the country. We don't know where New Jersey is going. But tonight's guest is going to, I think, shed some light on where New Jersey is going to be going here in 2017 and in the years ahead. And certainly we'll talk to him in just a moment. But again, folks, when we're looking at what's going on in New Jersey, it's getting costlier, getting a lot tighter to live here, and it seems like there's no remedy in sight. And that's the real truth. Once again, ladies and gentlemen, feel free to call in toll-free tonight at 657-383-0296. Again, because I want to hear from you and what's on your mind about Hudson County. And our toll-free number is brought to you by Olivella Restaurant in North Bergen. Now, folks, it's my pleasure to bring here to the program Hudson County Assemblyman Nicholas Chiavalotti from the 31st Legislative District, which represents Bayonne and Jersey City. Assemblyman, welcome to Talk on the Hudson.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate the invitation.
All right. I don't really hear you too. I'm not sure if you're too far away from the phone, Assemblyman. Do you hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Great. Yeah. I can hear you now, Assemblyman. Thank you so much for coming on.
Okay.
I appreciate you being on here. And did I get the name right? Because I was sort of practicing it for about a good 10 minutes before the show.
You know, that name has gone through a couple of transformations. My grandfather used to say Chiara Velotti. My dad said Chiara Velotti. And when I decided to run for office, I told people it doesn't matter how you pronounce it as long as you can find it on the ballot box.
All right. That's right. Just pull the lever, right? As long as you find Chiara Velotti, it's all good, right, Assemblyman?
Absolutely.
All right.
Fernando,
well,
call me Nicholas.
Listen,
All right.
Well, Nicholas, listen, thanks again for coming on and talking to Hudson here. As you're aware, it's a work in progress, but the show's been picking up momentum. So I'm glad to have you as the first elected official in Hudson County to join us here on the program. So I wanted to sort of get to some things here right off the bat, Assemblyman. I'm not sure if you had a chance to listen to my opening monologue a little bit. But, you know, I told my listeners tonight.
The last 30 seconds of it. So.
Okay, well, listen, I mean, not to be sort of repetitious, but I'll sort of just share with you what I said succinctly. And, you know, Assemblyman, I'm a homeowner and a taxpayer. And normally what I hear from a lot of residents that see me on the street all the time and ask me about the show, but in general, ask me, you know, what I think is the pulse of the Hudson County political climate. You know, they see me all the time. You know, Fernando, it's really expensive here in Hudson County. It's expensive in New Jersey. Whether it's overdevelopment, whether it's just the cost of living. And more times than not, people are asking, well, where's all the money going? You know, we lead the nation ultimately probably in the highest property taxes per capita, I believe, if I'm not mistaken. It's becoming very densely populated. And, you know, a lot of people that I know are leaving New Jersey. And you know, as an assemblyman in the 31st district, I know that it's very populated in Bayonne. It's becoming, you know, very tight there, certainly in Jersey City as well. What can you tell my listeners tonight in terms of, is there relief ahead? Is it just sort of a doomsday scenario that there seems to be being painted on a daily basis in terms for Hudson County residents? You know, what can you tell our listeners tonight on talking to Hudson Assemblyman?
Well, I don't think it's a doomsday scenario. I think we've been fortunate because Hudson County, especially Jersey City, has been the economic engine driving the New Jersey economy in the last 8 years. The reality is that when you look at new constructions, when you look at jobs coming to New Jersey, Hudson County has been a leader in creating those jobs and those opportunities. I think when we talk about the property tax issue, this is a serious issue facing every resident in our state. And part of the challenge is that we are over-reliant on property taxes to pay for public school education. So in a community like Bayonne, you know, 50% of our tax bill goes to pay for public schools. And there used to be a debate. You know, it wasn't that long ago when New Jersey was having a debate on how we were going to find sustainable economic streams besides property taxes to fund education. And in recent years, that conversation has sort of been moved off the table. And instead, we've been having this ongoing debate on how much money the state is willing to allocate to public school education. And this is an issue we're having again. It's another debate we're having in Trenton as we speak. You know, in Bayonne, Bayonne's the most underfunded school district in the state. Under the school funding formula, which was signed by John Corzine and never funded fully by Governor Christie, Bayonne only gets 51% of what it should under the school funding formula, which means each and every year it's underfunded by as much as $50 million. And that cost, that burden, gets transferred to the property taxpayer. And that is one of the reasons why property taxes are so high in the state of New Jersey.
Well, I'm glad you clarified that for us, because I'm pretty sure that a lot of our listeners, and it's not because of ignorance, I think it's just it's hard to sort of, you know, understand the way the formula works statewide. And I think a lot of us aren't really privy to that methodology. And I'm glad you outlined that for us today, Assemblyman. And, you know, when I hear you talking about the way that, for example, Bayonne in your district, the township itself, the city, is indeed underfunded. One of the other things, again, because you also represent parts of Jersey City as well, for my listeners that aren't aware about the layout of the 31st District here in New Jersey, one of the things that sort of caught my eye, and I was looking at a recent press release of yours, that your assistant was very nice. By the way, Rain was a sweetheart today to provide this information, so I appreciate
good.
That. You have
I'm
very
glad.
Good staff working for you. No, you have great staff working for you, and I'm glad it certainly made my job easier today in terms of, you know, what to talk about with you. But, you know, one of the things that caught my eye, Assemblyman, about, you know, looking at, you know, a key word I was talking about, education, does indeed remain the key to unlocking the American dream. I think it's important to make public education not just affordable along higher education levels, but also along the local lines. And to the best of my knowledge, I could be wrong, Assemblyman, but it's my understanding that in Bayonne, the teachers union is still without a contract. I could be wrong, but is that correct?
No, right now, this has been an ongoing saga in Bayonne for the better part of 10 years. The teachers union signed a contract in November, but that contract is set to expire June 30th. So at this very moment, they have a contract, but their contract's going to expire again, and they'll be without a contract for the third time within the last 18 months. You know,
wow.
A couple of years
That's
ago,
incredible.
They signed a contract. They went without a contract for over 4 years. You know, this is one of the great disservices, I think, that's occurred in Bayonne. You know, my mother was a public school teacher in Newark. My brother was a public school teacher in Newark. I value teachers. I think we need to, you know, pay them a living wage. I think we need to make their job a little easier. You know, from a state perspective, I think, you know, the PARC exam and some of these requirements we've put on teachers has sort of taken ingenuity and spirit out of the classroom, and we're sort of trying to force teachers to teach to these standardized tests, which I don't think is a good thing long term for our children. But yes, it's a so right now, to answer your question, they do have a contract, but it's going to expire July 1.
Okay, well, I mean, listen, I certainly hope that the Bayonne teachers get a contract that they deserve. You know, as an educator myself, I know the sort of the dilemmas that we face along job titles, and really what's a fair wage for our profession. You know, it's certainly an ongoing debate. Here in not just in New Jersey, but across the country, Assemblyman, and certainly, you know, I'm glad to have you, you know, have you be on board and, you know, be so supportive of teachers. You know, that's really refreshing.
You know, and I am supportive. I mean, we have a unique challenge in Bayonne in that we have recently discovered that the Bayonne Board of Education overspent its budget and is now looking at least a $6 million deficit effective July 1. What this basically means is, although Bayonne's underfunded and everyone recognizes that and everyone's working together to try to get more resources, what's happened in recent years is that the school board has spent more money than they knew they had. So basically, Fernando, I give you $100, you spent $120, you have a structural deficit of $20. So right now, one of the challenges we're facing in Bayonne is the school board just recently passed a budget that calls for a 4% tax increase and also calls for laying off in excess of 60 individuals. This could have a devastating effect on the education quality in our classrooms. You're an educator. You know all the data points to small classrooms working best for educating young people. And I am very concerned about where we are as a community. I've actually asked the state auditor, and I got the support of Speaker Prieto, to come in and audit the books so that we understand how we actually ended up in this situation. Because quite frankly, it took most of us by surprise when we learned earlier this year that there was such a large deficit.
Well, you know, it's sad to hear you know, those numbers being put forth in terms of what the Board of Ed has been spending. You know, at some point, Assemblyman, there has to be some accountability at the local level. And, you know, we don't know what heads are going to roll per se, but I'm sure that for our listeners tonight, you know, what I can tell them is stay tuned, because it should be interesting in the coming weeks and months if you're telling me there's going to be an audit. You know, at that point, you know, the numbers don't lie, as they say. And I'm someone who
right.
is a big stats person, and I, you know, I'm very much about quantifiable information, and we're going to find out exactly who to place the blame on. And again, we don't want
right.
to sound malicious here on Talking to Hudson, but there needs to be accountability. I mean, you can't be spending money like that and expect a school board to be promoting transparency. You know,
no.
I think that's a concern,
no, look,
especially for parents too.
Absolutely. And, you know, you have to recognize that you obviously have the teachers and that you're responsible for, and the administrators and the staff, but you also have a responsibility to every school child in the district. You have a responsibility to every taxpayer in the community. And I think that audit's going to take a period of time. My conversation with the state auditor is that the audit's going to go back multiple years. And I'm hoping that in the fall we'll have a clearer picture of exactly what happened and who and what is responsible for it.
All right. Well, listen, that's good to hear. And I know, you know, we've spent a few minutes on Bayonne. I sort of want to move up a little bit north in your district, Assemblyman,
sure.
And to a Jersey City.
Your listeners are aware, I represent a large portion of Jersey City. So if you live in Ward A, if you live in Ward F, I am definitely your representative. I also represent about 50% of the people living in Ward B and Ward E. And believe it or not, the way they design the districts, I even get up to the Western Slope. So we spend a lot of time in Jersey City working with the community in Jersey City, because it's not only is it the largest city in the state, but it's also a large part of the community that I represent.
No, sure. Listen, and of course, you know, you along with Assemblywoman McKnight and State Senator Cunningham, respectively, are United ticket. And we'll get to that in a moment, because I know that was in the news recently. And we'll get to that part in just a moment, Assemblywoman.
Sure.
But sort of moving up to, you know, up in the county to Jersey City. Last couple of weeks, I've had different local journalists on discussing immigration. And again, they're speaking from a journalistic perspective. And now that I have you on and you're an elected official, I'll paint a scenario for you, Assemblyman. You tell me if I'm wrong or not. And, you know, we're all the children of immigrants. And we, you know, here in Hudson County, like all of New Jersey and pretty much the entire United States, we're a melting pot. And, you know, we pride ourselves on being the children of immigrants. You know, I'm a first-generation American, Assemblyman. My parents came from Cuba and Colombia, respectively. My mother, you know, left communism for a better life. My father left Colombia for a better life, and they came here and found it. And I'm very grateful to them. They worked hard. They made a good living for themselves to the point where they can retire comfortably now and, you know, live their, you know, the twilight years, you know, relaxing and, you know, after working so hard. And what we've seen, for example, you know, the talking point of immigration has been a hot topic, to say the least. Now,
absolutely.
2017, but it's been a hot topic for many, many months, going back to 2016 and the very heated presidential election. Now, we know that Mayor Fulop in Jersey City signed an executive order declaring Jersey City a sanctuary city, and we know that word itself is very coded, because it, you know, it means different things to different people, and it's still,
right,
you know, very ambiguous in terms of what, you know, how do we define a sanctuary city. And, you know, I'll certainly be having some guests on in the coming weeks to help us define that, having some immigration attorneys and things of that nature to really define it. But you mentioned a really good point in the previous segment about tax dollars and, you know, what taxpayers can look forward to. And, you know, as an elected official in Hudson County, we know that it's my understanding that at the state level in Trenton, there seems to be a very big concern that the federal government now, with the new administration in Washington, could very well at some point in time deny federal funds to cities across the country that have come out publicly and have, you know, officially written into their municipal laws about that city itself being a sanctuary city. So clearly Mayor Fulop has put himself,
right,
whether we like it or not, in the crosshairs of Washington. We've seen Mayor and State Senator Brian Stack also put himself possibly in the crosshairs of Washington, D.C. When we hear the talking point, Assemblyman, of, well, if certain cities like Jersey City, for example, continue upon this course as a sanctuary city, and some residents have said to me, you know, Fernando, I'm not an attorney. It seems to me that if you're not following federal law, the federal government is going to act at some point. And if that's the case, now again, correct me if I'm wrong here. I'm trying to sort out the methodology here so our listeners can sort of know the way it works. Now,
sure,
should the federal government deny federal funds to Jersey City, there's been this sort of talking point, I think, from maybe local elected officials that somehow Trenton would reimburse these cities here in New Jersey. Now, as a
right.
homeowner and taxpayer, for example, how do you sell that
yeah.
to people in
so
the district?
Let me,
and it,
yeah.
No, I'm sorry. No, I just want to – one last point, though. How do you sell this
yeah,
to
sure.
residents who's a homeowner and taxpayer says, wait a minute, I don't want my taxes raised. Why should we – you know, if the city I'm living in that I'm paying taxes to is choosing not to follow federal immigration law and they're going to willfully do that, and the federal government decides to say, well, we're not going to provide federal funding because you're not going to follow federal immigration law. And then that cost is going to be passed on to the taxpayer and, you know, homeowners, et cetera. How do you make that as a sell to, let's say, residents in your district? Assembly?
So let me begin here. I am a first-generation American. My parents immigrated from Italy in the 1950s as teenagers because their families were looking for a better life. And they settled in Bayonne and, quite frankly, provided for my brother and I and gave us the opportunity to succeed. And so I recognize the immigrant experience because I've lived it. I think when you think about immigration, I think about it in three basic silos. First, as an American, as someone who has been raised to serve others and to care for others, we need to recognize that we're talking about human beings, that we're talking about families, and that in our area, as well as across the country, we're often talking about children who could be 18, could grow up in America, but who were brought here in an undocumented status by their parents when they were infants. So we need to understand the human element of immigration and immigration reform and also the attacks on immigration. We cannot lose sight that we're talking about individuals. The second thing is from a law enforcement standpoint. If you talk to the majority of police chiefs in New Jersey, you constantly hear of the dangers of trying to force the undocumented into the shadows. That it is a population, it is a significant population, and that it is in the best interest of public safety to bring these individuals out of the shadows so that they feel comfortable talking to law enforcement. I think the idea of using local law enforcement as ICE agents is exactly the wrong thing and counter to most of the police chiefs that I've spoken with who say that once you begin to do that, you actually damage public safety. People will be less willing to talk to law enforcement. The third element that I think you can also look at it is purely economic. If you don't buy the human element because, you know, Nicola Chevalotti is a Democrat and, you know, he's talking, you know, pie in the sky, love and caring, forget that. If you don't buy the law enforcement argument, you know, if you're a Sean Hannity supporter, these people violated the law, deport them. At the very least, you need to recognize the economic impact of these sort of undocumented policies. The reality is that these are people who are living within our community. These are people who are working within our community. And the idea that you can just take them and deport, 16 million is ludicrous. You know, Senator Bob Menendez, who, as you know, I worked for a number of years, wrote a book a few years back. And one of the stories in the book discusses a community in Texas that ICE came in and picked up the workers who were basically working at a poultry factory. And the psychological impact that had on that community, especially the children, because all of a sudden their friends, their teammates, their neighbors were gone. And could it happen to them? So I think when we approach immigration, we need to approach it broadly, and we need to recognize that we're talking about individuals that is probably in our best interest, public safety-wise, to give them a safe environment, and third, that they play an integral role in our economics. Fernando, to your specific question concerning sanctuary cities, the way a bill would work and the way the proposal as it's currently been introduced in the Assembly and the Senate It would have to pass the Assembly. It would have to pass the Senate. And then the governor would have to sign it. I think we can say with a great deal of confidence that this governor is not going to sign any proposal that's in the best interest of undocumented residents.
Well, Assemblyman, a question, though. Do you think that
sure.
a bill, the way that the bill right now is being worded in Trenton, do you think you'd be able to sell this to your colleagues in counties where, let's say, for example, in Morris County or parts of Warren or parts of Atlantic County that would look at this bill and whether you know their name has an R or a D next to it, Assemblyman, do you think that it's something that you can sell to your colleagues in the Assembly
I think the legislation as introduced is largely symbolic. I don't think it's practical to say that you're going to put the full credit of the state to cover any lost revenue. Fernando, I got to be honest with you. I've just gone through and looked at a whole bunch of summaries and read different sections of the Trump budget proposal. At the end of the day, and I know you want to talk about sanctuary cities, but at the end of the day, many of the programs that we rely on in Hudson County and Bayonne and Jersey City and North Bergen and Weehawken and Sea Caucus that we rely on the federal government to support are all on the chopping block. So right now I think our first fight is not about sanctuary cities losing funding. It's about a federal budget that could decimate urban America. It's about a federal budget that, you know, zeroes out Meals on Wheels, a federal budget that zeroes out the LIHEAP program, which, as you know, provides support, you know, for energy costs in the dead of winter. You know, it's about you know, right now the fight that I'm fighting at the federal level, I'm talking to friends and constituents about, is the idea of eliminating the Community Development Block Grant program, which is really a Republican idea, and understanding how that could possibly impact nonprofits in our communities who benefit from the program. So, you know, honestly, like for me right now, I'm having less conversations with my colleagues about sanctuary cities and more conversations about what's happening in Washington and how that impacts New Jersey and in particular Jersey City and Bayonne.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate that clarity. Again, this is why I brought you on the show. And, you know, this is one of the, you know, the many goals of the program here on Talking to Hudson. You know, we want to get answers. We want to, you know, get clarity for our listeners, because again, whether they own or they rent, they live here in Hudson County and they live every day here. They work, they pay taxes. And again, a lot of our listeners sometimes don't know what to think about the direction of the state and where it's going.
Well, look, I think it's a great idea. I commend you on your program. I mean, I will tell you, the one thing that startles me and that concerns me is that in my 14 months in the Assembly, and believe it or not, it's only been 14 months, there is no strategic plan on the part of the state on how we're going to grow the economy, how we're going to bring long-term jobs. There are ideas that sort of get floated out there by the administration. But, you know, one of the things we need in the state is we need leadership that's dedicated to New Jersey and that's focused like a laser on all these different challenges, whether it's higher ed funding, whether it's K-12 funding, whether it's the economy, whether it's transportation. You know, I sit on the Transportation and Infrastructure Committee, Independent Authorities Committee, and I got to tell you, I am very concerned about New Jersey's place in the global economy when we look at some of the proposed cuts that are coming out of Washington. So I think it's a great idea to have this program. I mean, I tell people all
thank
the time.
Thank you, I appreciate that. Thank you.
You know, yeah, I tell people all the time, and, you know, some of your listeners who have heard me speak will know this is true. I don't pretend to have all the answers. I hope I have a lot of questions, and I welcome, you know, more information, because one of the things we have is we have a lot of smart people, and we need people to sort of get more involved and to voice their concerns and voice their ideas so that we can move the state forward.
Absolutely. And again, folks, tonight, don't forget, if you want to call in tonight, toll free, 657-383-0296. Toll free hotline is brought to you by Olive Ella Restaurant in North Bergen. I see some calls in the queue. I'll get to you shortly. I do want to make most of the time here with the assemblyman, and I appreciate a few minutes of his time tonight. Assemblyman, you mentioned a very interesting word, transportation, and that was the next topic I was going to bring up here today. As we know, I know you've introduced legislation in the past regarding the regulation of auto buses or jitneys, which are quite prevalent
yes.
in Hudson County. You know, where I live in Union City, there are jitneys all on Bergerline Avenue that go all the way from North Bergen all the way down into Jersey City. And we have, you know, jitneys that go all the way from North Bergen on Boulevard East all the way into Manhattan. So we know that auto buses and jitneys are a way of life, and they're a reality for many of our residents here in Hudson County. They get us from point A to point B at a much more affordable rate than New Jersey Transit. And I commend you for that, you know, regulation in terms of, you know, that legislation you've introduced. I've also noticed that legislation in terms of transparency, and this is one I sort of want to ask you about.
Sure.
As it relates to, you know, transparency with New Jersey Transit and the Port Authority. And I'll say this, Assemblyman, and I think I speak for a lot of people listening tonight. I am someone who, I'm a motorist. I drive mostly everywhere. I'm very fortunate where I live in Union City that I have access to these jitneys, but I also have access to New Jersey Transit, whether it's the Hudson Bergen light rail up by me, which is only a few blocks from my house, the stop in Union City, or taking buses anywhere, or even taking the tunnel to New York City, where I spent a lot of my nightlife recreation there, a few nights a week. And certainly okay. I'm using my Easy Pass to go into Manhattan. Assemblyman, it seems to me that I don't know about the transparency from the Port Authority or New Jersey Transit. It's becoming just increasingly more expensive to cross a bridge or a tunnel. It's becoming increasingly expensive to take a light rail. And I can tell you a lot of residents have come up to me personally and said, Fernando, I don't know is there relief coming? Because I'll tell you something, it seems like maybe not every year, but it seems like the cost of crossing into Manhattan from whether it's the George Washington Bridge or the Lincoln or Holland Tunnel seems to be going up. It doesn't seem to remain stagnant. We're seeing, you know, New Jersey Transit costs for the light rail are sort of going up systemically, not like exorbitantly, but still it's going up. And residents that I talk to just seem overwhelmed. And I think that when I read about this, when it comes to, you know, you demanding transparency, I applaud you on that. But on that note, what's the status of that? Because I'll tell you right now, as a motorist and also as a commuter, I'm fed up, Assemblyman. I'm fed up with the Port Authority. I'm fed up with a lot of New Jersey Transit. And I think I speak for a lot of people tonight that, you know, they want to know, is there any relief coming?
Look, I agree with you. I mean, I think you have two separate entities there. When it comes to the Port Authority, you know, I had an opportunity recently to question Chairman Degnan and put some pointed questions at him about the Port Authority's operation. The Port Authority operates like the 800-pound gorilla in New York and New Jersey. I think that since Bridgegate, Governor Christie has taken a hands-off approach with the Port Authority. And that's been to New Jersey's detriment. I think they have not operated transparent. You know, there are some projects when with the Port Authority, they're so big, Fernando, it depends which wing of the Port Authority, which silo of the Port Authority you're talking with. There are some silos, like on the construction side, where they do the community meetings and people get to have input, and things seem to be working well, even though the project may be terribly inconvenient. But when it comes to the path and, you know, and the planning of, you know, another tunnel or expansion of the airport, they're a behemoth. They're really difficult to deal with. And, you know, as you have mentioned, I've supported legislation for greater transparency. I also think that we need to make sure that we're fighting for New Jersey's interests, because the Port Authority is a bi-state entity. And although we would love for politics to be completely out of the picture and for the Port Authority to hire professionals that just do what's in the best interest of the region, I think your listeners are astute enough to recognize that when you have commissioners that are appointed by governors, politics is heavily involved. So the Port Authority is a organization that, in my mind, should be doing the great planning in our region, should be planning for 30, 40, 50 years from now. And unfortunately, they have lacked transparency. They've had recent scandals. And, you know, I'm hopeful that some of the legislation we worked on will bring greater transparency. You know, New Jersey Transit's a different animal, Fernando, if I can continue. I mean, New Jersey Transit has been significantly underfunded. I mean, New Jersey Transit has been cut to the bone. And despite the fact that fares have increased substantially and that fees have increased substantially, at the end of the day, New Jersey Transit hasn't been funded at the level in our state budget to allow for safe, efficient, convenient transportation. And not making the commitment to public transportation puts not only our economy at risk, but also puts individuals at risk. And, you know, New Jersey Transit was a model organization just 10 years ago for what you want public transportation to be. I'm not saying it was perfect. Well, please, for all your listeners who use New Jersey Transit, I'm not saying it was perfect. But if you look, there is no doubt that today we are in much worse shape than we were 10 years ago. And one of the challenges of whoever becomes governor in January is going to be looking at public transportation and the importance of public transportation, whether it's the PATH, whether it's the Hudson Bergen Light Rail, whether it's our ferry systems, or whether it's New Jersey Transit, and how you develop a strategy to continue to grow and expand those services while not overburdening the constituency who utilizes them. And, you know, it's something that we talk about in Trenton, but it's something that I think in the new year with a new administration we'll be able to focus more heavily on. And one of the bills that did recently pass through my committee, Fernando, is adding public members to the New Jersey Transit Board. And I was proud to support that, because I think one of the challenges we have had in the past is that these public entities like New Jersey Transit did not have a voice of the people on the board. So I'm hoping that the legislation that we were involved in will begin the process of changing that.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, Assemblyman, because, you know, again, as someone who, I mean, I'm a motorist primarily, but I like to use New Jersey Transit when possible. Whenever I need to go to Hoboken, for example, and I don't want to drive, I take the light rail.
Yeah.
Certainly, it saves me the trouble of having to, you know, utilize an Uber or a Lyft. If I ever have to, you know, drive into Manhattan, I'd like to hope that the cost to me will remain somewhat affordable. It seems to be rising at a sort of, you know, skyrocketing rate, unfortunately, in terms of, you know, what it costs to go into Manhattan. It seems to be just becoming more and more unreasonable. I mean, I think it might just go up to a point where it might cost $20 one day to just go into Manhattan, which I think is absurd.
Well, all these things have a tipping point. At some point, people stop using the service. You know, one of the things we need to recognize is that, and it frustrates me a little bit when people criticize the government for spending money on infrastructure projects, on public transportation. The reality is, if you could make a profit from New Jersey Transit, the public sector would want you to sell it to them, right? So one of the reasons why the government is in public transportation is because at the end of the day, you're probably not going to be able to make a profit. So there has to be a subsidy. I got to tell you, I live in Bayonne, as you know, and as you've noted, and I spent a lot of time in New York, and the cost of the tolls, it's almost like they pulled a bait and switch, Fernando. When they introduced the Easy Pass, when I used to have to take the $10 bill out and pay it across the toll, it really aggravated me, right? Now that we have Easy Pass and people don't get hit with that bill every day, it, you know, goes to your credit card, there are some months where at the end of the month, I look at my Easy Pass bill, and I'm just astonished on how much money went from either driving up and down the turnpike or driving back and forth to Manhattan. And it's almost like the technology and the convenience of Easy Pass has made it easier for them to raise the tolls because we don't feel it immediately. Does that make sense to
you? Of course. I mean, no, I agree. Listen, I agree with you. When I look at my app on my phone and I look at my statement from my checking account, believe me, when I see NJ Easy Pass, I almost want to like punch a wall when I look at that number, because let's be honest, that number is a 3-digit number, more likely.
Absolutely.
For a lot of residents, you know, and it's aggravating. And, you know, I just want to sort of switch gears here. You brought up a good point and you were talking about the next administration. And, you know, I think it's a great transition to sort of ask you, Assemblyman, again, as an elected official, as a prominent member of the Democratic Party in here, not just in Huntington County, but in New Jersey. You know, Assemblyman, I'm a registered independent. I'm a guy that prides himself on being very middle of the road. I'm someone that can see the viewpoints of anybody, and I can look at issues from all angles. I can certainly be progressive on a lot of issues. I wouldn't necessarily call myself conservative on economic issues. I think if you're good with money, I think you're fiscally responsible. I don't think that's something that's exclusive to either conservatism or liberalism. I don't think, I mean, that's at least, you know, as a political scientist, that's not how I look at, for example, economic issues. You know, I look at it just being good with money and being responsible, you know? So, you know, going into November, you know, we have an election now, a gubernatorial election here in New Jersey. And as someone who's an independent really, and isn't beholden to a party per se, let me paint a scenario for you, Assemblyman. You tell me maybe if I'm wrong here, because I know that when I painted the scenario to other residents, they said, Fernando, you're spot on with this. And I'm going to throw it at you, and you tell me whether I'm right or wrong. Now, I look at November through the following lens. Number one, certainly in Hudson County and throughout New Jersey, the Democratic primary is looking very different this June than it did last year. Last year, there was an appeal where you had, at the time, Jersey City Mayor Stephen Fulop, you know, maybe not officially declaring, but you knew that his name was being floated around as a possible candidate to run in the primary. You also had your colleague in the legislature, State Senate President Steve Sweeney's name also being floated. At the time, you had Ambassador Murphy last year early on with commercials. I remember, I think it was sometime, I think during the Final Four last year, that I saw a commercial for Phil Murphy. And a lot of people were like, Fernando, who is this guy? Why is a guy running an ad to run for governor in April of 2015, and I said, well, you know, I mean, 2016, excuse me. And I said, well, you know, I think he's getting ahead of the curve. I think he's trying to get an early start here. And as we all know, that the potential sexiness of that primary season, I think, was shot down. Obviously, we all know that Ambassador Murphy clearly is going to be the Democratic nominee for your party coming up now in June and then moving forward into November. On the flip side, you have the Lieutenant Governor, Kim Guadagno, who I've met. Very nice. I've also met Phil Murphy as well, you know, at different events, and they're both very nice and cordial. I've sort of painted a scenario with someone. I mean, I look at someone like Phil Murphy, who certainly has the support of a lot of the Democratic machines here in the county, both in the north and certainly in down South Jersey, whether it's, you know, the Norcross, you know, connection down south, and of course, you know, the bosses up here in the north. But a lot of people look at Phil Murphy, for example, as possibly, you know, another John Corzine 2.0. You know, he's a Goldman Sachs guy. He's a guy with very little to no, you know, governance experience. And on the flip side, you have the Lieutenant Governor who, yes, while Governor Christie was out running for president, she was running the seat in many regards. And, you know, whether we want to call it good or bad, I mean, we can certainly debate that. But at the end of the day, Governor Guadagno doesn't have much of a record to run on. It's hard for her, I think, to run on the last 8 years because as a homeowner and a taxpayer, the last 8 years haven't been great for us. But on the flip side, you look at someone like Phil Murphy, who, again, he's been consolidating the support of a lot of the political bosses in New Jersey, and that, for numbers-wise, is going to be very beneficial to him since, you know, registered Democrats outnumber Republicans in New Jersey by a pretty large margin. But right now you're looking at two candidates that, quite frankly, aren't, you know, they seem a little flawed. They seem like there are some things that you can kind of find suspect with them in terms of, well, how are they going to govern? Are they a good candidate? Is this all we have to choose from? And when I play that scenario assemblyman to people, they've said, you know, Fernando, you're right. It is weird. I don't know what to make of Phil Murphy. I don't know what to make of his potential ability to govern. And on the flip side, Lieutenant Governor Guadagno has a very big hill to climb because the last 8 years have not been great for New Jersey. And I think it sort of poses a serious problem for voters, I think, in November. Am I wrong here?
Well, look, I think it's – even though the campaign started early, I think we're still early in the process. As you know, I've endorsed Phil Murphy. I've gotten to spend a lot of time with him over recent months talking about policy, really not politics, but about policy. What I would say to you is I think Phil Murphy is going to be governor, not because he has the support of the quote-unquote political bosses, but Phil Murphy has both the intellect and the emotional intelligence to understand the challenges that you and I face living here in Hudson County. You know, Phil is, and I would encourage, and this is the one thing I would say, that when you meet Phil Murphy, he surprises you. Right, because when you read his resume, ambassador, you know, businessman, you know, successful, you have a certain image. And then when you meet him, you realize that this is a guy that didn't grow up much differently than most of us in Hudson County. Right, this is a guy who had to go work, you know, under the table at the age of 13, you know, washing dishes, because you know his family of nine. You know, he tells a story about how he lived in. He slept in his parents' bedroom until he was 9 years old, right? We all, any of us who are sons of immigrants and daughters of immigrants who grew up in that apartment that, you know, probably should have been three bedrooms, it was two on a good day, and that's the living room sort of doubled as, you know, the oldest son's bedroom, Phil understands that well because that's his life journey. So I would encourage people to attend all these sort of public Q&A sessions that he's having. Because at the end of the day, I think when people meet him and they get to see him up close, he's going to win overwhelmingly. And I think that's going to be his biggest challenge is going to be actually getting out there and meeting people. Because the Phil Murphy that I've come to know and respect is very different than the guy that you see on paper. You know, as far as the lieutenant governor, look, I think the lieutenant governor – is a very nice person. I've gotten to spend a little bit of time with her. I think her challenger in the primary, Jack Ciccarelli, is a friend of mine in Trenton and a good man and a smart man who I think has his own ideas that he could actually win the primary. And I think that primary is going to get very interesting and going to be a lot closer than people think. But at the end of the day, I think when you look at the state of the New Jersey economy and what has happened over the last 8 years, I would be very surprised if the Democrats didn't win back the state house.
I mean, certainly the odds are in the favor of the Democratic Party in New Jersey. As we all know, on a flip year, when there is a Republican in the White House, there tends to be a Democrat in Trenton. And, you know, sometimes there tends to be the opposite, as we all know, back from 2008, once – at the time, you know, Barack Obama was elected president, we kind of had an idea that then candidate Christie had a chance against the incumbent Governor Corzine. And it turned out that he pulled up the upset 8 years ago in November of 2009. So, like you said, there's a long campaign season ahead of us. We're going to see a couple of things. And folks, again, I want to thank the assemblyman for
– yes. Fernando, as an independent, the one thing I would encourage you to do is to try to attend one of these town hall meetings that Phil is doing.
I have
grown to admire the man that he is and sort of his vision for the state and where we need to go.
Listen, fair enough. You know, I have attended it. Phil comes off as a very cordial man, and I've reached out to his campaign, and his campaign has assured me that in the coming weeks he's going to be coming on the program. So I'm excited about that.
I'll put in a good word for you.
I appreciate that. Well, listen, I hope I was fair with you today. I think I was very fair and very cordial with you today, Assemblyman. on the show.
No,
and again,
guys,
I want
to talk about the issues.
No, no, absolutely. And before I let you go, I just want to sort of bring some to your attention here. And again, folks, I see some numbers in the queue. I'll take you shortly again. The toll-free hotline tonight brought to you by Ella Vella Restaurant in North Bergen. Toll-free tonight, 657-383-0296. I'll take your calls in a few moments here. I'm just trying to maximize the timing with the Assemblyman here on Talking the Hudson. And Assemblyman, a story that came to my attention today, and it's very sad, and I'm sure you as a Bayonne resident, this should resonate with you. I was very saddened to hear that quite possibly if Marist High School doesn't raise $1.5 million by next month, it could very well be closing. And, you know, what are your thoughts about the possibility, which seems to be inevitable in Bayonne, about Marist High School?
You know, I got a call last night from Denise Ridley and also from former Mayor Joe Doria, both of whom are alumni of Marist. Marist is an important institution to Bayonne. I'm hoping that they will be successful in their campaign, and I've sort of shared it on Facebook, and I'm making phone calls and talking to people about it. You know, I have to be honest. I'm a prep guy. All right, I went St. Peter's Prep. You know, full disclosure.
Sure.
But I think it's really difficult to think about Bayonne without Marist High School. It has been so important to so many individuals. And once it went co-ed and sort of expanded its reach, it's become so much more diverse, not only racially, but also geographically, with so many more students from Jersey City. Look, I'm obviously upset and saddened by it. I'm hoping that they will be able to raise the funds or come up with a strategy that will allow them to continue. You know, the pressure on these private parochial high schools is just incredible. You know, I had served a few years before it closed. I had served on the board at Holy Family and seen just the budget numbers and how little the tuition actually covers for the education of an individual student. And the smaller independent parochial schools are under great strain. I just got off the board about a year ago of St. Peter's Prep, and, you know, so their economic picture, which is obviously much more robust. And it's just, look, it's a challenge. I mean, we have to figure out a way. I've talked to a couple of parents. I've had some people give me a call on it. And I don't know. Unfortunately, Fernando, there's no real quick solution there, right? It's, you know, the community has to come together, and we have to see if we can preserve what's become so important and what's been so important for so long. And it's such a good option for, you know, children here in Bayonne who, you know, want to go to a private high school, want to go to co-ed education. We just have less of them. You know, we have less of them in South Hudson, and I think that's a shame.
No, it is a shame. And again, Assemblyman, before I let you go real quick, I knew I had to ask you this because I got an email about it.
Sure.
And as a motorist, I don't want to put your feet to the fire, but I have to ask. I know last year when the gas tax passed, I know a lot of motorists throughout New Jersey were very upset. You know, fortunately, the, you know, on a global market level, the, you know, crude oil has remained down, and certainly, you know, a gallon of gas doesn't cost what it used to. So clearly the gas tax is not hitting us as hard as, you know, God forbid, if, you know, on the global marketplace, you know, a barrel of oil went up again significantly. So in that regard, we've been very fortunate. But since the gas tax has taken effect and has, you know, been in existence since January 1st, what can you tell my listeners tonight, though, in terms of, can we really trust Trenton to utilize this fund properly? Because as we know, bridge, you know, tunnels and roads in New Jersey are some of the worst in the country.
Fernando,
you
know me, and my, you know, the constituents who know me. The only way you can trust Trenton is if you continue to shine a light on it, because you got to keep us honest. That's the reality. I mean, I am not. I know it drives my colleagues crazy when I say this, but at the end of the day, every budget we need to examine to make sure we're spending money, the money that we've committed to spend. I will say this, though, two things. One, question number two passed was important in November because it puts the Transportation Trust Fund in the lockbox, and that should prevent any future governor from diverting the money that's raised from the gas tax. And I'm committed to preventing any governor from diverting transportation trust fund money for any other projects or any other items that are not absolutely transit projects. The second thing I would say to you is that the gas tax and the transportation trust fund were important to the state because it's an economic driver, and we knew if we didn't do it, we'd have a longer lasting job loss, and it could really impact our industry. But Fernando, I got to tell you, that was one of the most difficult votes I cast. And it was one of my most frustrating, because when you look at the history of the gas tax, the first time that it was discussed that the TTF was going to be in trouble was over 20 years ago. If the members of the state legislature 20 years ago had the intestinal fortitude and the political courage to say, we're going to raise the gas tax 1 cent a year, we would never have been in the position that we were in. And, you know, what was especially frustrating for me was that in January and February of last year, the governor said, there is no crisis. It's make-believe. This doesn't need to be on the front burner. And by July, he was closing down projects that were critical to economic development and job growth in New Jersey because the fund had gone bankrupt. You know, that sort of duplicity is something that we have to reject. But to your listen, look, I commute to Trenton 2-3 times a week. My wife has a commute from our home in Bayonne out to West Orange every single day. And there is no doubt that that vote was extremely difficult. Fortunately, because of global trends and the global economy, we haven't felt it at the pump to the extent that we could have. But I just want to be—I want to make sure that you and your listeners understand that was not a vote that was done lightly. That was a difficult sort of conversation and process to go through. And hopefully we fix it for the next decade or more. I do think, though, that we do need to revisit how we run the transportation trust fund. I think we need to go back and make sure we fix what we call the quote-unquote bank to make sure that we're not wasting money and that we are using the money properly. And that's something that I'm committed to stay on because I don't expect to be asked to vote for another gas tax because the money's been wasted on, vehicles for DOT. I mean, that's not going to happen. I mean, money should be spent on projects and projects that have a lasting impact on the Jersey.
Well, I appreciate that, Simon. And listen, and I give you a lot of credit for being transparent here today, and because I know a lot of, residents throughout New Jersey were very upset at their legislators in their districts throughout the state for casting yes on the votes. And, again, when, someone like yourself takes the time to explain the logistics of it, I appreciate that. And again, and I'm glad to see that you'll fight to keep that lockbox closed. I think it's important. Certainly, a lot of the concerns that residents have is, once you implement a tax, it never goes away. I appreciate you, giving me that clarity today. And folks, again, listen, we're coming up to the top of the hour now. And Assemblyman, did you have a good time here today? Was I fair or not with you, sir?
No, it was very fair. I appreciate the conversation. And, next time I'm on in the coming months or, whenever we can do this again, hopefully we can I can be on for some caller questions. I'm actually calling you from an office at a restaurant because I was taking a break while everyone else was having dessert. And I see them waving to me saying it's time to pay the bill. So,
well, Assemblyman, I appreciate you coming on the program today. I hope to see you back on here again. I'll certainly be in touch with you, and it'd be great to have you on. I'm glad you enjoyed your experience here on Talking the Hudson. Just to sort of, for our listeners here in your district, though, just some basic contact info. If any of your constituents want to reach out to you and they don't know how to, I'm not sure what information you want to sort of convey, an email, a district office number, anything you want to tell our listeners tonight.
The easiest way to get me is if you go to the New Jersey legislative site and type in my name, or it will pop up. My email is ASMCHIARAVALLOTI@LJLEG.org. Email is a great way to contact me because I get them, I get to read them. You can also call the district office, but for me, email seems to be the most convenient way to get me.
Well, you know, Assemblyman, listen, I want to thank you for your time tonight. You were on, you were a gentleman, you were on a lot longer than I'm sure you would have liked to have been, but I think it was a productive episode tonight. We talked about a lot here in not just Hudson County, but for the voters of New Jersey. So I appreciate your time. And again, folks, you know, I do want to thank Assemblyman Chiarvalotti, I hope I said it right this time, for coming on the talking to Hudson. And I hope to see you back on here soon, sir.
Thank you, Fernando. Enjoy. Best of luck.
All right. Thank you again, Assemblyman. All right, folks, that's again Assemblyman Chiarvalotti here on Talking to Hudson. We appreciate his time tonight. Thank you, Assemblyman. We'll talk to you soon. And again, you know, folks, you know, a great, you know, episode tonight. And I can't say enough about the Assemblyman being a gentleman this evening coming on the program. And we talked a lot here tonight. And certainly if you miss any part of the program, you can always check out the archives, which are www.blogtalkradio.com/talkonthehudson. And again, I appreciate Assemblyman Chiarvalotti coming on the program tonight. And folks, you know, want to cover a couple other things here today on the program here. And again, you know, I'm glad that the Assemblyman came on for as long as he did. We actually was on for almost an hour. So I'm glad we were able to dissect a lot of what's going on in Hudson County, not just in his district, but I think statewide, which affects all voters here. And a couple of things that I wanted to sort of, you know, bring to your attention here, and we're, you know, just sort of give you an update here. It's my understanding from speaking to him this evening, we are going to have Guttenberg Township mayoral candidate Mr. Wayne Zitt on the program next Wednesday night to talk Guttenberg politics, Hudson County politics in general. So I'm looking forward to that. And, you know, I did get a commitment from him, so I'm excited to have the candidate next week here on Talk on the Hudson. But one of the things I sort of want to bring to his attention, and certainly I'm not sure if you had the chance to see on the news feed today, but, you know, nice job by Hudson TV today. Again, you can always check out their news articles by going to www.hudsontv.com. Some tension right now in Guttenberg. Apparently some sources told Hudson County, Hudson TV in the last 48 hours that the Hudson County Prosecutor's Office apparently is investigating the Guttenberg Township Police Department. Details right now are very, very vague at this time. Apparently, according to the statement put forth by the prosecutor's office, it reads as the following. Quote, the office of the Hudson County Prosecutor will neither confirm nor deny an investigation. Speaking on the condition of anonymity, there is an investigation that's ongoing regarding fraudulent record keeping or other improprieties, possibly the reason as to why the current mayor, Mayor Gerald Dreshoff, is indeed stepping down. Now, again, there's a lot of speculation running rampant right now. I don't want to sort of add to that, but I'm interested in having mayoral candidate Wayne Zitt on the program next week. We'll be able to talk a little bit about this and, of course, other things in Guttenberg and, of course, in Hudson County. It's my understanding that Mayor Dreshoff will not be running for re-election this November, and certainly coming up now in the primary in June, the town councilman, Wayne Zitt, will be stepping up to run for mayor. So we shall see. You know, I've gotten to know Wayne. He's a gentleman. He's, you know, very cordial with me. I have nothing but good things to say about Wayne. Very, very helpful, and a guy who was instrumental in my philanthropy last year, volunteering for the American Cancer Society. And I'm very indebted to the town of Guttenberg for their contributions to my charity events last year to benefit the American Cancer Society and making strides against breast cancer. So I'm glad that Wayne will want to come on the program next week and address these allegations. Right now, again, it's very vague. But it's my understanding, according to what some news reports locally have indicated, that the prosecutor's office in Jersey City apparently is looking into the Guttenberg Police Department. We're going to see whether or not it's they're making a mountain out of a molehill. We're going to find out. I know residents in Guttenberg have reached out to me and have wanted to, you know, get some sort of sense of what's going on in Hudson County's smallest township, perhaps the smallest township in all of the state of New Jersey, since it's only two blocks long, to be honest. But we're going to find out next week. And again, I'm very much in debt and grateful to Councilman Zitt in Guttenberg for wanting to come on the program next week. And, you know, I look forward to his appearance, and we're going to be talking a lot about Guttenberg and what's going on and whether or not a lot of the recent press coverage that the township has received is fair or not. And I know that Wayne, I'm sure, is very eager to address these allegations and whether or not some of the, you know, accusations floating around are valid or not. And I'm glad to have him on. So we'll find out next Wednesday exactly what's going on in Guttenberg and moving forward, what residents in the township can expect with the primary now in June and then consequently coming up in November for the mayoral election, of course, the council seats as well in the township of Guttenberg. So stay tuned again, folks. You know, we'll, any new developments, I'm sure we'll report them next week here on Talking to Hudson. And that's what we're here to do, folks. We're here to give the people accurate information, to dissect it as much as possible, and again, be a voice for you, the people. And that's something that I've been consistent about with this program since its inception at the start of the month here in March. And moving forward in the coming weeks, we're going to be able to really dissect what's going on in all the townships in Hudson County, because there's always a lot to talk about here around us in all the municipalities. So, you know, stay tuned. Of course, you know, again, breaking news, we will have Guttenberg mayoral candidate and current town councilman Wayne Zitt on the program next Wednesday live again at 9 p.m. to talk Guttenberg politics and to talk about everything Guttenberg. And certainly residents should tune in because I'm sure that the mayoral candidate has a lot to say. So, again, folks, you know, we're coming up here to the end of the show. And listen, I can't say enough about what a gentleman, Assemblyman Nicholas Chilavalodi was earlier this evening, and dedicating almost an hour to the program. So I appreciate that, and hope to hear from him again, and certainly other members of the legislature that will be coming on shortly in the coming weeks. I can assure you that we'll be having some great guests here on Talking to Hudson. So it's really pertinent that you listen every week, folks. And, you know, again, if you miss any part of the program tonight, you can always go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Talking to Hudson. All the archives are there, absolutely free to listen to from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet, whether you're walking your dog tomorrow, it should be a little bit better weather, hopefully, whether you're doing laundry, homework, on your commute to and from work. Hey, it's the best political analysis you're going to find anywhere in New Jersey, specifically here in Hudson County, because we dissect it here. It's always for you, the people, to hear what's going on county. And again, folks, listen, it's, you know, I can't believe, you know, the we've been on for a little over an hour, so it's winding down here. And I'll tell you, it flies by every single week. There's always something great to talk about here on Talking to Hudson. So, again, don't forget, folks, that every Wednesday night live at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, you can listen to the best commentary about everything Hudson County right here on Talking to Hudson. And again, if you missed any part of tonight's broadcast, in my exclusive interview with Hudson County Assemblyman from the 31st Legislative District, Nicholas Chiavalodi, and always go to www.blogtalkradio.com/Talking to Hudson from any PC, Mac, smartphone, or tablet. Again, I want to thank Alavala Restaurant for being a proud sponsor here on Talking to Hudson. Again, if you're not aware, Alavala Restaurant is indeed a brand new gem in Hudson County, and it's the best Italian food you're going to taste anywhere. Trust me, I've gone there, I've eaten there. I would not steer you wrong. Trust me, ladies and gentlemen. And Alavala Restaurant is located at 7709 Bergen Line Avenue in North Bergen. They're open for dinner 7 days a week. Call them ahead of time to make a reservation because it does get packed there on a nightly basis. So call them at their reservation number, 201-662-6110. Once again, to call Alavala Restaurant in North Bergen to make a reservation, 201-662-0. Don't forget to check out their website, www.Olivella, that's OliveLanj.com. You can check out their menu and a lot of the good things that they have there on display. Believe me, you're going to definitely want to check them out online. Don't forget to like Olivella Restaurant on Facebook, and don't forget to follow them on Instagram and Twitter. Again, I'm very grateful to Olivella Restaurant for bringing you Talk on the Hudson. So, again, folks, if you have a topic or an issue you want to hear about next week, please write to the show's inbox, talkonthehudson@gmail.com. Once again, talkonthehudson@gmail.com is the show's inbox. Don't forget to like Talk on the Hudson on Facebook. The amount of likes has just grown daily. So, again, I'm very grateful to all my Facebook subscribers. for showing support on our social media page. So again, whether it's during your morning commute, getting that daily workout, walking your dog, doing laundry or homework, tune in and trust me, you'll be happy you did. If it's unbiased and unfiltered, it's Talking the Hudson. Good night, Grove Street in downtown Jersey City. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.
Held us down, but now it looks like things are finally coming around. I know we've got a long, long way to go, and where we'll end up, I don't know. But we won't let nothing hold us back. We're putting ourselves together, we're polishing up our act. If you've never been held down before, I know you refuse to be held down anymore. Well, don't you let me